She's feisty, she's funny, and she tells it like it is. Get ready for Empower Readings with Corby Mitlide. What are your opportunities right now? What are the possibilities? Ask Corby and cross the bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly. Here's your host, Corby Mitlide.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Past Life Party. This is the thing that we're going to start doing once a month. And for those of you who have no idea what that is, it's looking at who you were before you were the person you are now. And that is the cuckoo clock, who was a German cuckoo clock before it moved to Cobleskill. Thank you so much for sharing. All right, so here's some examples. There have been people who have come to me and said things like, why do I love Romania, even though my background is Scots-Irish? Or every time I hear that little beep, beep, beep thing from a truck backing up, I panic and my heart goes in my mouth. What's up with that? Or there's this guy at work. Every time I pass him in the hall, I'm embarrassed. Like, you know, I've said something to him and I know I've never spoken to him. What's with that? These things, when we have them, are usually triggers from a past life. The example that I love to use is a woman who came to me and said, I have this terrible time whenever I get wet hair in my face. I panic. What's with this? And what it turned out is that she had been a passenger on the Lusitania. The Lusitania was a ship that was torpedoed and sunk in 1915. It's what helped bring America into World War I. What I saw was she was a passenger on the ship. Yes, she fell into the water. She also had the big pile of hair that they had from about 10 years before. At the very turn of the century, they had those masses of gorgeous hair that they piled up in these beautiful French twists and chignons. And by 1915, most women had it bobbed, a shorter hair, like chin length. Since she had the longer hair, it was that much more hair to hold water, which helped her to sink more. Plus that, the hair was so long that debris from the ship kept tangling in it and dragging her down, so she drowned. So the wet hair now is a replay of what happened to her in 1915. She told me that after that, now that she knew what it was from, all of the panic went away. And that's one of the reasons that we look for past lives. If there's a phobia, if there's an obsession, if there's something that is tripping up your life and you want to get rid of it, sometimes a past life is a good way to, if you will, uncork that bottle. Now, we will be taking calls tonight to work on your past life questions. The number is 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. We're going to be taking calls all hour. So if you want it, I know that there were several people who raised their little paws on Facebook when I called for people. Call us now. I will be more than happy to talk to you about these things. I know that with me, a past life that I remembered from World War I Germany keyed me into an awful lot of things. Why I'm a teacher this time, why I love certain airplanes. As a matter of fact, remembering that past life actually brought me to my husband because he is a World War I historian, and we ended up meeting each other at the old Rhinebeck Aerodrome in Rhinebeck, New York. That is a wonderful place where they have World War I air shows. They've got planes that run from the 1909 Blériot, which was the first plane to cross the English Channel, all the way up to 30s and 40s Barnstormers. So I went there. I fell in love with the planes. That's where that first World War I life kicked in. And then he and I met and we had that wonderful time. So again, it's 248-809-3475. Notice we've changed that last number. 248-809-3475. Now, I noticed that there's going to be something coming in from Empower. I do this on Skype, as you can tell. So we have this little text box at the bottom, and we've got a little message. We have somebody already on the line. Fabulous. So bring them on. Welcome to Empower. What and who am I talking to? Hello.
Hi, I've got a call. I'd like to talk to Corby.
Hi, yes, this is Corby.
Hi,
who
Corby,
am I speaking with?
This is Kelly from Horseheads.
Okay, Horseheads, for those who are on other parts of the world, is down near the Finger Lakes, right near Ithaca, yes?
Yes, that's it.
Got it. Kelly, what's your question?
I am curious why I am so fascinated with elephants. I've never seen a real elephant. I've never met a real elephant, but I love elephants.
Do you remember when the pachyderm passion started?
When I was a kid.
Okay.
I have collectibles. I've got little statues. I've got carvings. I've got pictures. I've got clothes. I've got so much of elephants, and I just love elephants.
Okay. I immediately got the picture. You had an, this is, we're going back to around, the 1920s. And you had an uncle who traveled with Ringling Brothers. And he was part of the Elephant Act. And so you were one of the rare kids who got to go and see the elephants. You would be able to go behind where the circus wagons are. You got to pet the babies. You got to feed them peanuts. And there was one little schnutz, little guy, that was your favorite. That was with Ringling Brothers for like 10, 15 years. And whenever you would go see your uncle, you'd see the elephant got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, there was a point in time where you were in the back, you were visiting the elephants, and something happened, whether it was a cage broke, whether it was somebody opened a cage, and there was some kind of an animal. It's a four-legger. It wasn't like a snake, but something that came out, and you were terrified. What happened? But your elephant, who was now a big elephant, picked you up in his trunk. And
oh,
just,
how cool.
And boom. And so I literally see you in the elephant's trunk. And you're kind of getting squoze. You can't breathe much. But the animal runs right underneath. And so you literally just grabbed under the trunk and you went eyes to eyes with that beastie. The next year, that elephant was gone. It had gotten ill and had to be put down.
Oh.
But from then, there was this bond with you and elephants. So now you still have that feeling of elephants are my buddies and I'm theirs. So one way that you can actually make that work for you this time is sometimes zoos, you know, adopt an animal to help pay for it, or a petting zoo, or support the elephant sanctuaries in India or Africa, whatever. Do you remember, were they big ears or little ears?
They were big ears. They were African.
Okay, so it's the African elephants that are yours. Okay. Okay, cool. So that's where it is. You recognize that these are sweet, kind, intelligent beings that, frankly, you owe a life to.
That is so cool.
So that makes sense to you?
That completely resonates with me. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great evening.
Thank you. You too.
So, and that's how past lives work. People say, where do you get this stuff? Guys, I have no idea. I really don't. When someone comes to me with a past life question, I listen very carefully to your voice. And then, if you will, I kind of go away a little bit. I leave what I call the ceiling open. And whatever visions come, I let come. Because while at first they may not make a lot of sense, once I start describing that picture to you, it's like flipping the switch on a movie, and it all starts to move, and I get to see the whole thing. So, all of you out there who raised your paws on Facebook, bring in the calls. It's 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. I know that there was one person who wrote me online that said, I've been having this relationship with this guy, I'll just say M, and I really don't get it. He thinks we're in a committed relationship. I'm not sure we are. I met him at work. What's with this? And what I got, Lori, this is Lori's question. I literally see, this is medieval days, and he is one of the people working to build one of the great cathedrals, and you were just a local who brought him lunch, whether it was a runner was sent to the local tavern and you brought it, or the foreman had, you know, beer and bread brought for everyone. You were the one who always brought it in the basket and you know, the skins of wine or beer. And you were very kind. And you always had a good word for this guy and polite. And he just built up this thing in his mind about how you obviously wanted to marry him and have his kids, et cetera, et cetera. And so he was an apprentice, then a journeyman to stonemasons. So he had a respectable job, and he went and he spoke to your father, and your father thought, okay, this looks like a good match. And one day, all of a sudden, you found out that because you had been talking to this guy, now your life was set. And it took you about 4 years to come to terms with it. And that doesn't mean that you weren't married during that time. But it was simply a matter of, okay, this is what happened to me. This is what I'm going to have to deal with. I'm not sure why, but okay. And so this time, you're back in it. I want to see that you do a little better job of making sure that the relationship is what you want as well as what the other guy wants. So do pay attention to that. Again, 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. Something that I've noticed with a lot of people, which I find fascinating, we generally will remember warrior lives, but believe it or not, the ones who remember the most warrior lives are not guys, but women. There are an awful lot of strong women that I know. My friend Sharon Henderson, the graphic artist Donna Barr, myself, we have all had major lives in the past 100 years as soldiers. I was a pilot. Sharon was a tanker. I believe that Donna was also part of the same tank unit around with Sharon. Sharon and Donna were both involved with the Africa Corps. For those of you who don't know World War II, that was the Desert Fox. That was Rommel's crew. And I think one of the reasons that a lot of us strong women have come remembering these warlike lives is to feel what it's like to have to take command in different difficult situations. Have enough of a remembrance of what war was like to do our best to stand against it. Now, is it easy? No. Women today are in better shape in terms of being listened to in the world than they were 100 years ago, but it still isn't perfect. So we remember these lives to remember what we want to avoid and what we need to bring forward. So if you're a guy and you remember once being a female ballet dancer, there's a reason for it. We have all been both male and female. You can't learn just being one gender, just like you can't learn always being wealthy or always being from Texas or always being married with kids. Right, I see something coming in from Empower Radio. We probably have another caller. Come on, Brian. Brian is the person who has taken over for us from the beloved Captain Bob, who has gone on to other things. Okay, lost the caller. So, think about it. Find the part of your life that puzzles you most. Find the part of your life that means I have questions that I keep tripping over. Good example in the books that I did with Robert Schwartz, Your Soul's Plan. Ah, good. We've got her back. Hi, who do we have this evening? Hello?
Hello, it's Sue.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing this evening?
Good. Sue, where are you from?
Ithaca.
Okay, so we're still in the Finger Lakes. Okay.
Yes.
What is the past life question that you have?
Well, I have three boys. And the youngest one and I seem to have a closer relationship than I have with the other two. I really think of it as kind of my Oedipus relationship. But I was wondering if there was a past life that he and I shared that makes our relationship now just a little bit closer.
Okay.
He's very tender towards me. It's a different kind of relationship than one of the other two boys.
Okay. And what's his name and how old is he now?
His name is Nicholas and he is 9.
Okay. Sue and Nicholas. Hold on. Let me get the picture. Okay. What I'm seeing is English Garden, and I see you having an absolute argument with Nicholas. Okay. Again, it is a mother-son relationship, same roles as you're playing now.
Okay.
But this is someone, Nicholas was really financially very savvy. But you were the widow. You were still the one who was the head of the family and in control of the finances. And he was financially savvy. He was an attorney and he was solicitor, I think they called him there. He was trying to convince you to move your money away from. Ah, okay, I got it. You ever hear of De Beers, the Blood Diamonds, and
yes.
Cecil Rhodes? Okay. Apparently, you wanted to put your money in there because you saw that it was going to be a great payback, but your son was more of a reformer, okay? More Gladstone than Disraeli, let's just put it that way. And you got your way, but when things started to come out about the appalling conditions and why they were blood diamonds at that point, you never forgave yourself. You felt like your money bought the whips, your money bought the bad food, and your money bought the neglect. And there was nothing that Nicholas in that life could do to dissuade you from those feelings. So you went into decline from there. So this time, he is very protective. And if you ever get into an argument with him when he is older, you will probably lose because there will be that inside him that says, I don't care what she says. I've got to protect her from herself.
Okay.
This is also one of the reasons this time that probably as much as you love beautiful things, your taste is either simpler or you push away, having those beautiful things away from you so that money goes to other people rather than what you want. Does that make sense to you?
Perfect sense. Yep.
Okay. Okay, perfect. So that's what that is.
All right.
For, you know, remember, he's still too young for you to let him have full reign here. Nine is not a majority. But as you get older, he will probably be the one who gives you the best advice.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
And we've got somebody else on the line. Hi, welcome to Empower Readings. Who do we have?
Hey, Corby. This is Vanessa from Boston.
Hi, Vanessa. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. I'm glad you called. Tell me what's going on.
Oh, I'll run something past you and see what you think.
Okay.
I'm a serial quitter, and I have sometimes have a hard time forming solid connections with people or things because I don't trust in its permanence or in their permanence. And mm-hmm. I just wonder if this is some sort of baggage left over from a past life, or if this is just part of the cards that I've been dealt in this lifetime.
Now, the first thing that I see is this is something that was deliberate. You've had several lives that had a religious, spiritual bent to it. And there was a real concern with you also about greed and wanting things more than spirit. So this is something that I see from, let's see, probably about the 1870s. I guess we have a lot of 19th century tonight, 19th, 20th, that whenever you got close to something and you found yourself wanting it too much, you would deliberately sabotage it or finish it and give it away. And every single time it hurt, but you kept telling yourself, this is what I need to be spiritual. But what happened is you cheated yourself of an awful lot, and people started using you. They knew if they would support you in a particular project or were very helpful on a money-making scheme, you wouldn't keep it. You'd end up giving it to them. So it was very much a sort of two-faced thing. This time, you're a serial quitter because there is a part of you that says, if it isn't going to be for me, I'm not going to give it to anybody else. I'm tired of that. And rather than fall into the same trap, you just lose interest and turn away from it. That way it doesn't go to anybody else, but it doesn't go to you either. So now in this life, it's time to say, this is for me and I'm going to continue it and I don't have to give it away. You know, it's the thing, a lot of people, when they're given gifts, if they're uncomfortable getting gifts, even if it's something they really wanted, they turn around and find somebody else to give it to. And that was kind of the case for you then. So it is not that you have no backbone. It is not that you can't finish things, but it's a matter of making sure that you don't get taken advantage of again. So I would say, just choose one thing that you want and you finish it because you deserve to have it. Make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Excellent. You're welcome. All right. We've got about 2 minutes to break. This is Corby Mitlide, and you're listening to Empower Readings. Tonight, we are doing the Past Life Party. If you have a question, an obsession, something you don't understand that you think stems from a former existence, call us. The number is 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. And on the other side of the commercials, we will see what we can find out about who you were when you weren't you. Stay tuned.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start shopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-yah!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood.
Hi-hi!
Concrete.
Hi-yah!
Brick walls.
Hi-yah!
Trees.
Hi-yah!
Small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars. It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
My sport is football, but my passion is education. My name is Nnamdi Asamoah, and this is how I live United. I see too many kids miss out on moving up. Kids who could go on to college, but just need that extra little push. So every year, I take promising high school students on a college tour. We check out the dorms, the library, meet some professors, find out where the best late night grub stops are. It shows them that there's a whole world beyond their own. But what's even better is that most of these kids decide college is for them. I'm Nnamdi Asamoah. I show kids that a higher education means a brighter future. So when it comes to living United, I don't just wear the shirt, I live it. Join me.
It takes all of us working together to make a difference. Find out how you can live United for Education. Give, advocate, volunteer. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Empower Readings. It's Corby Mitlide, and we are doing the Past Life Party. The number to call is 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. And we have a couple of callers already waiting. Who's our first up?
Hi, this is Tina from New York.
Hi, New York City, Tina.
Upstate New York.
We're in upstate.
In Schoharie, a little west of Albany.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Know it well. So, what can I do for you? What's your question?
Well, it's kind of weird, but I am an animal lover. I love, you know, all sorts of animals. But there's something with birds. Anytime, if I see a flock of birds and I'm looking up, it gives me this feeling, like this very relaxed feeling anytime, and it's always happened to me ever since I was a little kid. So I'm just curious as to what's the deal with that.
I immediately get a First Nations thing with you. For people out there, I don't necessarily say Native American because I have clients all over the world, and in Canada they're known as First Peoples or First Nations, so I tend to like that better. The sense I'm getting for you is literally up in the Quebecois area. So we're talking Eastern Canada, long before it was Canada.
Okay.
And you were one of the, what they call the Six Nations people, the Oneida, the Iroquois, and very much a medicine person, male. And you were able to do talking to the birds. You were not as comfortable with people as you mm-hmm. were with birds, because birds were very clear about what they're doing. They flew. When a bird flies, they get perspective. And you sense that. I mean, you didn't have the psychological, well, you know, the birds, they're all about perspective, et cetera, the way we would now, you know, on the 21st century head cases that we are. But there was an innate sense that when the squabbles in the clans, in the peoples got to be too much, you'd go sit up and you'd walk and you'd talk with the birds. You would watch. You would ask for your particular totem. Which, interestingly enough, was not an eagle, was not a hawk, is a blue jay. Blue jays are noisy, but they know what they want. They're beautiful and they know it. They get the food they need. And it was almost as if I have to have an obnoxious person, I'm going to make it a blue jay. So I don't know what kind of birds you particularly gravitate to, but you probably would do very well to go take a look at what blue jays mean in totems, have them around your house. If you find a blue jay feather, pick it up, make a little collection, tuck it in, you know, in a hat band or something. But birds are your things. Some people, like I'm a bird person myself, I adore my cats. Everybody who knows me knows I adore my cats. But there is something about birds, their beauty, the way they play in the air, that yes, birds rest me too. But where it is with you is start looking at birds from a metaphysical viewpoint, from a messenger viewpoint. I think that that's going to make a huge difference for you. When did you really notice that birds relax you?
I would say when I was a little kid, like very, very young, probably, I don't know, maybe 9, 8, 9, 10.
Okay.
So I would be standing outside and I would just, you know, there'd be this big flock of birds and I don't even know what kind, you know, and I would just look up and it's just like this relaxation just sort of came over me. So I don't pay attention to it so much more now, but it was something that was really strong when I was a little kid.
When we're little kids, we also are more inclined to see our invisible friends, to be aware of discarnates before the logical world pounds our brains. So I would say go find that little kid part of yourself again. Go outside, watch flocks of birds, just relax into it, and specifically ask Blue Jay to come and talk to you because there might be a message for you there. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We have another caller up right away. Welcome to Empower Readings.
Thank you. How are you?
Hi, who's this?
This is Denise from Rochester.
Hi, Denise. What can we do for you tonight?
Well, ever since I could remember, I've had this anger and resistance and resentment towards the Catholic Church, never wanting to go to sit in the pews, never wanting to listen to what they have to say. Just a lot of anger stemming from that. And I have pretty open-minded parents, so I'm not sure if that's related to this lifetime or if it's a major past lifetime that keeps popping up for me.
Oh, it's a major past lifetime, and it is right around the time of the 16th century Reformation, okay, when the Catholic Church was first being vilified. You were quite the Calvinist. You were someone who railed against indulgences being sold, against how wealthy the church was. Every time a monastery was gutted by Henry VIII, you know, you raised a glass of wine. And it's all about that. But this time, I'm sensing that you came in with a pox on both your houses, if you remember that old phrase. It is not so much the Catholic Church that drives you crazy, but any extremism. Back then, the only extremism that you were aware of was the Catholic Church, because living in the British Isles, there was only the one. There was, you were either Catholic or you were Protestant. But now I wouldn't be surprised if any kind of extremism frosts you, is the polite way I'll put it. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Okay. Completely.
Okay. Can you give me an example of where extremism hits you in this lifetime that you've had to avoid?
Bigotry, hate for one another, extreme ideals of what others see deem as perfect. There's a lack of compassion. There's a lack of love. There's a lack of equality. There's judgment. All of that just burns my buns.
Okay. And I take it that you are probably not a follower of any major religion either.
No, I'm okay. Not. I consider myself just spiritual.
Okay, well, that makes perfect sense. You're trying to bring yourself back into alignment, and I totally, totally get that.
Yes.
So, all right. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Super. You're welcome. All right. We've got one from a girl that I read before. Her name is Irene. And Irene said, I am completely obsessed with vintage china and crystal and sterling silver and silver plate and table linens that are vintage. What does this come from? And what I got for Irene is that she's the keeper of histories, oral storyteller, a clan mother, a matriarch. And while her straight ahead attitude might have others guessing, she's had more male than female lifetimes. What I was given is that she relishes the leaders are best when female role. It's very different from the leaders of movements like suffragettes. She doesn't try in her lives to take over a role that's usually given to a male. Her lives usually show the very, very best of what makes a woman strength and resilience and humor and a love of family tradition. And the particular life I saw for her, late 19th to very early 20th century, again, was a woman in Italy, very rural. She was illiterate. Her family felt that boys got educations and girls got too big heads. But she had a great sense of story about even trivial things. She was also extraordinarily skilled at needlework, standing out even when all women knew how to do sewing and embroidery. So she married as she was told to, but within a month of marriage, her new husband left for America to make money and send it back home, and she moved in with her in-laws. Surrounded by her husband's older siblings and all their kids, she didn't have any of her own, but it never struck her as unfair because it was her husband who was in America doing the grand things for the family, and she was content to either wait for him or go there as the future dictated. And so she amused her nieces and nephews in the meantime with little stories, and she would often illustrate little gifts for them like handkerchiefs or slips with little embroidered figures from favorite stories. Her husband finally sent for her. They settled in northern New Jersey and started raising their own small family there. She took in piecework. She embroidered wealthy women's wedding gowns and trousseaus, but her favorite thing was the parcel of linens that were set aside to send home the family in Italy with little scenes embroidered on hems and tablecloths to show what life was like in America. So her love of all of that stuff now comes from then. And the silver connection, I saw her husband watching for old and bent and thrown away pieces of flatware, which he'd bring home and fix and polish. And they never matched, but they were silver. And this was a mark of the life that she wanted for her own children later. And so Rini's love of old china and crystal and silver calls back a time when such things were marks of feminine pride and accomplishment. And today they're a lot less vital for a woman's identification than they were then, but they still have a clear call to her, kind of hallmarks of family stability and stories told in texture and beauty rather than words. You see, not all past lives come out of pain. A lot of them come out of things that have wonderful meaning for people. So Rini's a perfect example. She loves collecting these things, and it comes from a good memory, not necessarily a bad memory. And that's one of the things that I want to stress for everybody. Sometimes past lives are simple gifts. No big deal. Now, there was another one from a woman. Her name is Lisa Marie. Excuse me. And she has a question about why is she drawn to powerful and influential people? Why is she drawn to helping women? Why is she drawn to Haiti? And how has being a single parent helped her achieve her life plan? And when I looked at this, all of these questions really came down to the Haitian connection. Her link with Haiti was heart deep. She experienced the initial conquest by the Spanish firsthand. She was a member of the Jaragua clan, and she watched her queen die at the hands of foreigners. You ran into the jungle with roughly a dozen other women and children and made your way to another clan in safety. It's one of the reasons why being a single parent is something that gives her strength rather than weakens her. In those days, women could be clan chiefs as well as men. So it was no surprise that she took a command role in saving those around her. And at that time, she swore an oath to her gods that in life or death, you would find a way to take care of the people in the land. While she hasn't always reincarnated onto Haitian soil, there's always been a connection. She spent several lifetimes in and around the military. Remember, we talked about that, in order to learn how to defend that which she loves. She was part of the Huguenot Rebellion in France. She fought as a Native American warrior and clan leader in King Philip's War in the late 17th century in New England. She returned to fight as a member of the Iroquois Confederacy with the British in the American Revolution. And in all three of those conflicts, she chose to incarnate on what would be considered the losing side, in order to learn what it is to fight against great odds. She always died young in battle as a man. Her longer, more influential lives are usually female. It was then that she was ready to come back to Haiti and incarnated as a woman during the first years of Haitian independence in the first third of the 19th century. She was wife of one of the ruling party members, and she worked to sway her husband subtly in the favor of women and children, which in those early years of Haitian self-rule was exceedingly difficult. She did her best to aid peasant women and their children and those who farmed the land. She wanted to make sure they were treated fairly. This life combines all of her skills, the bravery, the seeing the bigger picture, the ability to gain help from others where others might not be able to get that help, her ability to work with prominent players, and the specific courage in the face of adversity and passion for the land that has influenced her more than any other in any of her lives. I mean, she talks about going with the Haitian earthquake that we had a couple of years ago. All she wanted to do was be there and help and heal. So her choosing to come in as a female this lifetime is specifically because the women of Haiti know how to build and rebuild, nurture and believe in something better for the next generation, even when everyone around them doubts. This lifetime culminates in the completion of the promise that she made to the land years ago. We've got about 10 minutes to close, but we do have time for another call or two. 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. In the meantime, we got a question from Janet. And Janet says, when I met Fred, the moment he hugged me and kissed my neck, I felt like we had been together forever. We finish each other's sentences and think the same things often at the same time. What was our past life connection? Now, there's a Celtic resonance here and a life of land travel. Any life that has been good to Janet has been in the country. She's a pagan in the literal sense, from the Latin word paganus, meaning country dweller. Lives in cities are her harshest lives and where she gets the most difficult lessons. She and Fred have had encounters that mirror the best of the folk songs. When she's a city woman, he's the traveler that entices her away from hearth and home. But not all lives are with Fred as the male and Janet as the female. Janet has also been the gypsy, the wanderer that persuades Fred to leave a stifling job to go adventuring. The particular life that resonated at this moment was one of their very earliest lives as Celts. And in this situation, Janet was someone who could communicate with the people of the hills, the little people, and their companion spirits. But as such, she chose to live alone as the thickness of man, that is his lower vibrational being, became hard for her to bear. Most of the men of the time were warriors and smiths and farmers. And she needed someone who heard the higher singing as she did. Once a year on Beltane, the village would send a youth to her so that she might help to keep the land strong and fertile. There would be one night of love, and then the youth would return to the village to a place of honor for the year. However, one year the youth sent was less than fit, and Janet refused him. He became furious and beat her. She was knocked unconscious. When she woke up, it was to find the youth dead and an older man, Fred, in this lifetime, tending her wounds. It was someone that you had been with 15 years before. And while Fred married and raised a family, he never forgot Janet. So the two of them left the body of the youth where Fred had killed him and moved away, continuing to travel, never staying in one place for long. They never had their own children, but they did take in the lone ones and the waifs that they found, a lot like, if you will, a traveling foster home. They would stay for a few years and then move on. And it was a fulfilling life as Janet and Fred adjusted to each other's rhythms and set the wheels in motion for other lives together. I was pleasantly surprised, because this is one of the readings that I was able to do ahead of time with a little deeper checking in, that the two of you were careful in your pre-birth planning, Janet, always to meet each other either very early before commitments were made to others that had to be broken, or later in life when the children had grown and other partners had died. There is a very deep sense of the rightness of family with both of you. And you chose to honor all commitments in your lives before meeting. This has also been mirrored this time in that both Fred and Janet are parents whose children are whole and well adjusted, and that previous relationships don't impinge on current partnerships. Now, I sent this to Janet to let her know what I found, and I got a wonderful response from her. And trust me, if a medium, a psychic does a past life reading for you and it resonates, please let us know, because if we're doing it by email, we might never get to find out. So, Janet's comment: truth runs through this reading. I have always felt a connection to the Celtic culture, music, and art. And Fred is also quite connected, so much so that for dress-up occasions, he wears clothing from the culture. Interesting that the way we got together in this lifetime was through a mutual acquaintance, a younger man that I was dating and whom Fred had known as a neighbor and partner to his cousin for 3 years. When I refused this younger man's behaviors and ended the relationship of 2 months, he became very angry. Shortly after that, I began dating Fred, and after a few dates, he gave me a sword because he was afraid that this mutual acquaintance was violent and dangerous and angry with me for ending things. Also very interesting, we have been on the peripheral of each other's lives for almost 10 years with many mutual friends. Also interested that I have fostered many of my friends' children, and Fred has fostered many four-leggeds. It feels like perfect timing. This, my friends, is why I love, absolutely love doing past lives. Well, we all have our specialties. Some people are really rocking mediums, like my friend Allie Cheslick. Allie is one of the best mediums I know. Then there are people who specialize in things like astrology and numerology. That was our wonderful buddy Sharita Starr last week. Me, it's the past lives. Yes, I can do the mediumship and I do lots of other things, but the delight of being able to take something going on in your life now and then being able to roll it back, see how you worked with it before, what you were doing then, why you decided to bring some of that resonance here to this life with you for either healing or a deeper understanding. It's just amazing. And for those people who say, oh, we couldn't possibly have past lives, isn't it just once around the wheel? Oh, my dears, I have to ask you, do you know any human being who is so intelligent, so perceptive, so willing to learn and change that they could get it all done in one lifetime? I never have, and I've met a lot of people. We choose. We choose lessons. Do we want to learn about abundance? Well, we could come in as someone who's next door neighbor to Mitt Romney, or we can come in as a water seller in Calcutta. If we want to learn about love, we can come in into a broken relationship. We can come in breaking up a relationship, or we can come in one of those rare, wonderful families. I mean, my husband, he's had the only totally normal childhood of any of the friends that I knew. His parents got married and stayed together. He loved them both. They had a great time growing up. I mean, how many of us know someone that totally functional? Well, Carl must have done something right in my eyes to give him that strength. And naturally, when I needed someone who would teach me that that strength is available, there I was, and all of a sudden he and I met through strange circumstances, but it was something that we planned. So we're just about over for the show. Thank you so much for all of the callers. Next week is going to be open mic night, which means anybody can call on any subject and we will be chatting. If you want to get in touch with me between show times, you can always find me on Facebook, Corby Mitlide, or at www.firethroughspirit.com. And if you go to Fire Through Spirit, there are articles and event calendars and links and all kinds of good things. And of course, I'm always going to be watching on Facebook. So if you've enjoyed tonight, let us know. We will be back in July. We've got a couple of wonderful guests. I have somebody who's going to be talking to us about shamanic work. This is Yena, and I just met Yena a couple of weeks ago, and she just struck me as absolutely crystalline energy. I think you're going to have a wonderful, wonderful time with her. If there are guests that we've had before that you'd like me to bring back, by all means, drop me a note, because most people have such a good time on the show. They are more than willing to come back. So, until next week.